So Farhaj and I want to thank everyone for coming onto the podcast. It used to be called We Strive, the We Strive podcast hosted by me, Corey McCain, founder of We Strive. And now I brought on my co-host, Farhaj. Farhaj, want to introduce yourself really quick?
Hey ho, I'm Farhaj Main, the CEO of Canna and a super passionate enthusiast about building startup ecosystems here in the Midwest and Texas.
There you are. Yes, you love your startup. So we love talking about, we're not just talking about startups though. We're interviewing a lot of amazing people outside of the startup world too. Anyone that's created any kind of business or has grown any sort of brand, we want on our podcast. We've already interviewed some amazing founders from around the world. We interviewed the guy that literally ran, he was doing all of the online security for Bill Gates, and he was part of the Obama administration. And then he was like one of the first hackers at the CIA.
Wild.
We've interviewed people that have had millions in sales, $1 billion exits. So
e-commerce, Reddit, and Ed Hardy. I mean, it's been really cool. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's been a good time. So we're excited for you guys to be here. This is just the first season. We have a whole lot more episodes coming, and yeah, thanks for being a part of our journey, and hope you guys subscribe and tune in every week and enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to Building Fires. Bang, yeah. Bang. Today's Building Fires podcast brought to you by no sponsors. Boom. And on this episode, we had the amazing.
Hey, here's your sponsors. Yeah. Get them out of here. We don't want them. Yeah, we got Brian Leonard this week, who CTO and co-founder, very first employee, aka co-founder of TaskRabbit, helped grow that company to what it is today.
Exit
of IKEA,
a unicorn.
Exit of IKEA, Googled it. Yeah. You don't know the number, but it's probably a lot. And so they killed it there, and now he's running an amazing company called Group Aru, which I come up with a great slogan for at the end of the podcast. You got to stay tuned on that. Farhaj, tell him how it goes.
I mean, that was, you were quick with it. I was very surprised.
It's pretty good. But Grouparoo, well, explain Grouparoo, because you're more technically sound than I am.
When we look at teams and startups that grow extremely fast, one of the biggest problems is that there's no good engineering infrastructure set in place, so that all of this data that you're getting within your platform, like your marketing team's just not able to hop on and see that data, use it to, you know, re-engage your customers, your clients, and everything. So what Brian is doing, because him and his whole team had, you know, just a lot of experiences throughout, you know, TaskRabbit and their other ventures with this problem, is they built a solution, and they're building this open source tool that helps, you know, your engineering team seamlessly connect the back end to your marketing infrastructure and stack. So more to come on the podcast. It is definitely exciting. And I think for sure, you know, Brad and I had a conversation, we're going to be using it at Canna. And looks like you're going to be teed up for a pilot chat, huh, Corey?
I guess so, man. I don't know what I'm getting myself into, but we'll figure. Again, what you just said is way better than what I would have said. So, I'll see what I'm getting into. But I know I can't explain why I need his product, but I've seen what his product does, and I'm like, that's amazing. So I'm very excited. But hope you guys enjoyed the episode, and welcome to the Building Fires podcast.
With Brian Leonard, the guy. All right.
Ben. Great to be here. I'm Brian Leonard. I was the CTO and technical co-founder at TaskRabbit. I'm currently the CEO and founder at Grouparoo, a marketing data tools infrastructure company.
Perfect. Yeah, and so Farhaj and I are really excited about this. Where should we start on your journey? Like, was TaskRabbit, I'm assuming it wasn't the start of your startup journey, or was it?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to ask, actually, like, did you finish up college and then, because I saw you worked at IBM for a little bit, and then like it kind of translated into your first leap of faith, or, you know, what was that ignition point to get into entrepreneurship?
Yeah, so I grew up in Texas, went to school in South Carolina, did internships all over, and kind of the whole time, I always thought I would be an entrepreneur, but was also very practical. That leap of faith is a good way to say it, Farhaj. I took the safe route there, and didn't particularly have an idea when I was 22 that it was time to do, and, you know, didn't have the capital to do that, or the experience for that matter. My last internship was with the IBM and a program they called the Extreme Blue. Extreme Blue. It sounds it was the 90s, you know? Like they made like a thing called like, yeah, exactly. It was really a recruiting vehicle for IBM. And gotcha. You'd go there, one of the many possible companies, like, you know, sections of IBM would sponsor a 4-ish person team, give it a mentor, and you do a thing. And so that worked for them, as the recruiting vehicle for me, at least. And I ended up working in Boston, with IBM. And, I recommend, that path. Like, I don't think you necessarily need to go right into like creating a startup or something. I think I learned how to be a great engineer. Hundreds of millions of people were using what I was doing. I got a lot of experience and working in companies and, you know, learning the ropes.
Very cool. And so, at what point does TaskRabbit come into play? And then we can kind of like take your journey from there.
Yeah. Cause that wasn't, or was that your first company that you started?
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, always somewhat entrepreneurial, various things growing up as well, but looking for something to start doing. And so after 5 years or so at IBM, it was 2008-ish. Most relevantly, the App Store had just come out on the iPhone.
Oh, wow.
And so I started thinking, like, I basically started making some apps and put them on the App Store. I didn't tell anyone that I was doing that. One of my funniest things I remember is I was at this IBM conference with somebody, and I made this app for the Boston subway system, the T. And it would help you find the nearest one and show schedules and things like that. And
wait, quick question. So you made it, like, you just did it, and then, like, for whatever, or, like, Boston had you make that app?
No, I'm sorry. I there was no app for the transit system, and I, mm-hmm. I made one and on my own.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, keep going. Sorry.
It's like a mini startup.
That's so cool.
Gotcha.
I mean, it was early days. You know, there was the... It was like a fart app. Like, you know, there's all kinds of crazy stuff in the early days. Like, exactly. You hit a button, it would fart. Like, it was very exciting. It was a miracle. Like,
we actually need to interview that guy next, Farhad. Write that down.
Yeah, that guy killed. There was a flashlight. It was huge. Like, it was super exciting.
Oh, I remember the flashlight app.
Right. Yeah, because I used it too. That's crazy. That's... Wow. Okay.
Anyway, there was no app, and I, you know, Got together the information and made this app, created a like an LLC kind of company. Anyway, the point is that at the IBM conference that I was at, the guy's like, "How'd you get here?" And I was like, "Oh, let me see where the nearest station is." And I pull out my app. I didn't tell him it was my app. And he's like, "Oh, that's awesome." And he bought it right there on the App Store in front of me. And he didn't know I made it. And it was you know, it's a part of that entrepreneurial thing. Either way, it
felt great. Like, just
it was
really great.
Yeah. I was just like, that's right, buddy. That was like, I was starting to feel ready to do something else is my point. I worked with this lady named Leah, the founder of TaskRabbit, turned out eventually. Everyone under 30 at IBM in our department knew each other. There weren't that many of us. And, you know, and she says, "I'm going to quit and I'm going to make this thing called Run My Errand." It wasn't called TaskRabbit yet. She had this idea. And I said, let me make your iPhone app. I was like whispering her on the like goodbye party. And so, you know, had got myself jazzed up to make some leap. Liked working with her, thought it was a good idea, and jumped. And so I didn't actually make that app for quite a while. We did a variety of things. Most notably, I worked on Facebook Connect, which just came out, like the blue login button.
No way.
Very cool.
I sound like an old man here. Oh, my God.
That's so dope.
That button's been there my whole life, man. I interviewed this guy a couple years ago, and I was like, "Well, what did you do before iPhone program?" And he was like, "I don't know. I was in middle school." And I was like, "Get the hell out of here."
Get out of here.
So... I did the Facebook button. That kind of parlayed into a sort of they had an incubator in the Facebook program, Facebook Rev Fund or something like that, vaguely YC-like for people working on the Facebook platform.
Cool.
We got into that. Eventually, that led to, you know, funding from the West Coast and some advisors, and we moved out, Lee and I, 2010 to San Francisco, and then subsequently launched. We were only in Boston, then launched it in San Francisco. Then that was the beginning of the story.
Yeah, the launch of your first city, you know, runmyerrand.com, and building, like, you know, the chicken egg problem that exists in marketplace right. startups. I feel like that must have been a lot of fun and a lot of stress too.
Yeah, so yeah, Leah did most of the hard work there. She interviewed people in coffee shops, and like it was just a website, and it wasn't that stressful, really. For me as much, because I was only helping out on the side, but very stressful for her. And you know, you got this site up, so she said she'd give it a certain amount of time, and if it didn't work, you know, like, you know, go back and get a regular job, right? And it kept the problem with startups in general, in my experience, is that it's never like clearly a bust.
Yeah,
it's always like it's very rarely like straight up and to the right, but it's also never quite the end of it. And so like the worst thing that could happen, and I certainly had my moments over the years in this journey. There's a graphic somewhere I've seen, Paul Graham did, like trough of sorrow. It's just like, it kind of looks like it's working. Like the wiggles, there's like this annotated graph. It's like the wiggles of potential, but like, it's back down. Not that great. And so like, it just kept like, oh yeah, this might work. Oh, we got 10 users. Oh, we got 100. Oh my gosh. And so we, you know, kept extending that thing. And then we got into the Facebook thing, and that was exciting, and then we raised $1 million, and I was like, all right, this is gonna be something. We got our first taskers, who were called runners then, you know, by talking to people in coffee shops. We got our first clients, which were called posters then.
So cool.
From a mom's group in a neighborhood in Boston.
I'm on your guys' Wikipedia right now, and I'm like, oh, there's Brian Letter and it started the company. It's so cool, man. I think this is incredible. Honestly, like, I love the beginning of that journey and the runners and all that stuff. And so how did people take it in the beginning? I mean, were you just like, hey, you can do tasks and get paid, and they were like, cool, and you were like, okay, and then that was it? Or like, was there any drawback? Did people say that they didn't think it would work? Like, what was that kind of mindset in the beginning?
Yeah. I think, so in the beginning, it was like, just like Wild West, beautiful internet kind of vibe. Like, empty text box. Like, what do you need? And so we got all kinds of crazy stuff. And there was no like, and then you, we tried so many models over time. The very first one was you essentially bought credits. Like you could buy 10 credits for $13, or it's kind of like iStock photo. And then you basically said how many credits, which are more or less dollars, like this was worth to you. And so we got people that were like paying a dollar for a Facebook like, or, you know, we got people flying to Houston to wait in line at the embassy to get your passport. Like, you know, you just never know. Like, there was a squirrel rescue in my mind. There's all kinds of weird crap that people do when there's just an empty text box and you can put anything you want in there and then maybe find someone to help you.
Stressful? Go ahead.
No, it wasn't. Like, we did some of the errands ourselves in the early days, for sure. You want that to go well. But, like, when they were weird and, like, eventually it went out to the community, you know, they basically said, yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, sure, why not? Or they would like counter offer. Like, there's all kinds of mechanics we had built in place. But in general, it was just like beautiful to watch like these weird things happening and people getting, and just exciting to get the value out of the thing. Some startups have this thing, like something interesting happens and the bell dings, right?
Yep.
Like, sale. Yes, task, woo! Like, you know you've made it when you're like, would you shut that thing off? Exactly. It doesn't work here.
I don't give a shit. Turn it off.
Yeah. Yeah. And so at some point I became less directly involved with like the literal things happening on the platform. And like, because I was building it the same at 100 tasks as I was at 1,000 tasks as I was at tens of thousands of tasks, right? More or less. And so at some point, like I was like, all right, shut that thing off. We're gonna be building some stuff here.
Was it stressful for you though, as the developer, like just starting from scratch? And were you guys the only platform doing this at the time? I guess that's one of the questions really quick.
Yeah, it was pretty early. Like Facebook and Twitter were just kind of starting.
So So as the first platform kind of doing this, was that stressful for you being the main developer, kind of going like, I guess we'll build this? Or did you have a lot of support with that?
I mean, looking back, like it should have been stressful. Like I was just naive, I guess. Like I just assumed it was going to work. I think there's something about being an entrepreneur, like every meeting you have, you get super, you have to see something in that you get super jazzed up and like, this could be it. This could be the thing. Like, you know, just like whatever it is, like it's just this relentless optimism. And I just had a kid. Like it was kind of crazy, frankly.
I can imagine.
And I just thought it was going to work. And it was definitely stressful. Like I rebuilt the whole thing, you know, starting late 2009. And we relaunched that as TaskRabbit. Like I was pulling some long days, but like, it was also like coming out of IBM, super great, you know, it was hundreds of thousands of people, like 200 I'm working with generally, it was down to two. Like I remember one of my first days, I went into Lee and I had a brainstorm and we were in there for a couple hours, whiteboard. We worked out of the Zipcar offices in the early days in Boston. And I came out and I checked my mail, my new Gmail, you know, not a single email. Cause like who the hell would have emailed me? That I remember that moment very specific. Like, all right, this is everything that was happening was right there in that room, and now it's out here, and now I'm going to build the thing. I was listening to tons of Rails podcasts and learning and getting ramped up on that community, and like to the point where there was so much to build that like I'd hear about some library that did whatever, and I'd like use it that day because like I had to build a rating system and I had to build a payment system, and you know, it's just like continuous learning and excitement, and somewhat naively stressful but not worried.
That's amazing. Yeah, I think it's interesting too because you were mentioning to me like one, there's so many parallels between TaskRabbit and Canna. Like we're actually running based off of a credit-based system right now too, and funny enough, that's actually working well with our customers. And also like every week I could think of at least two different times where, you know, we'd have to go sub in for a worker and put a shift in at the farm. And as awesome and sometimes grueling as it is, I think it builds a lot of empathy with your users. But, you know, Brian, you mentioned that y'all were relatively a small team for a pretty significant portion of time before you started to expand, right?
Yeah.
So year one, two, I think year two was like three or four. And then, yeah, I would love to hear about like the team's growth and how you kept up with launching in multiple cities, you know, because that's a big undertaking.
Yeah. So we in Boston. Oh, it's like a super jerk move, but if I don't remember exactly right at this point. Like, let's see. So in Boston, I was the only developer. And Leah built actually, well, a majority of the original platform, and I was helping out part time.
But then we
decided to rebuild that thing, among other things, to get some tests and change how that payment model worked, and a few other things. And so we called that V2. TaskRabbit's currently running on V3. That's a whole different story.
It's amazing.
Nonetheless, we had kind of like a biz dev-ish person and a customer support community-ish person in Boston. They stayed behind, and in the end, didn't stay on too long. We hired it when we knew we were going to move to San Francisco. We hired a marketing person there, and so when we moved out to San Francisco, we had some like help in Boston, and we were three people working out of a co-working space on Pier 38 in San Francisco. Now, right by the ballpark, it's called Dogpatch Labs, kind of proto WeWork, we might see it as these days. Sorry for anyone out there. This touches a raw nerve. It's also lines up, and it is now a condemned building. You're not allowed to go on that pier in that building anymore. Our logo was up there for a long time because it was closed. Dogpatch Labs is now in Palo Alto, I think. And so we worked there.
Yeah.
We hired our first engineer. He started, and we started our first day at Pivotal Labs, which is a consultancy firm in San Francisco. So our team went from me engineering-wise, to an engineer and two people we were paying consultants, you know, on that day.
Yeah.
And so we expanded there, and they also helped train him up on the platform, and they were used to diving into random Rails code bases, and, you know, we started making some progress there. That allowed me not to be training him the whole time, and so we could keep our forward momentum.
That's awesome.
Very good. One thing I wanted to ask is we'll kind of transition more towards what you're currently building now. So with your current company, we'll touch on that in a sec. What do you think are a lot of things that are some things that you took from, you know, all your experience starting as a, you know, brand new CTO and then growing this massive company? What things do you think you brought from that onto the new company you have now? What skill sets? Sorry.
Yeah. I think pragmaticism is a major engineering CTO sort of skill set. There's, even though I hinted that we've rewritten this thing a few times, in general, there's always a new shiny thing, and there's always a quote unquote right way to do it. I think pragmaticism is super important. And remembering from a business perspective that it turns out the easy thing to do, generally speaking, is to build a product that runs on the internet that works. Not to diminish that in any respect, and like there were certainly bugs and all these other things, but
yeah.
Distribution, depending on your business, like acquisition or distribution or channels or any of these things, like people hearing about it and caring about it is by far the bigger problem than building a product that works. TaskRabbit's general problem wasn't that the payments didn't go through or we couldn't match people up to do work. It's like that most people looked at a shelf sitting on the ground and didn't get their phone out. It wasn't any of the product stuff. Like,
yeah, I think it's like that pre-purchasing decision-making process and how like you're top of mind for that like thought to turn into dollars is something you have to both engineer like the situation and your product for.
Yes. Agreed. And so, you know, towards the end, you know, like you have the early adopter crowd that were doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And we got a little more e-commerce-y and like to try to cross that chasm. There's a book out there called that, Crossing the Chasm from the Early Adopters to the Early Majority. And, you know, we became more about many different ways to become top of mind and build relationships with those taskers and do various smart things there. To when you see that shelf, you think TaskRabbit. When you see your dirty house, you think you know, TaskRabbit. By, you know, sort of brain loops and things like that. That,
yeah.
I the other it was... thing. Oh, go,
okay,
ahead,
go ahead.
Go ahead. All you, Fraser.
Okay, I was just gonna say, it's like another thing that I really enjoyed from our conversation was like, I didn't realize how frontier like TaskRabbit was with respect to like, you know, the labor marketplace like boom that happened over the last like 10 years.
Yeah.
And I can imagine, you know, both from, you know, upskilling your workforce all the way to, you know, innovating in labor law to create like an inclusive and, you know, awesome ecosystem for these workers to win. It's not a small feat, but you probably saw some incredible situations where you had to make small changes that was, you know, the greater good.
Yeah, I think one thing I'm really proud about at TaskRabbit is, you know, we knew the laws, and I think we adhered to the laws better than any other company that I'm aware of. But we also took into sort of account, like, those laws were made in 1930 to prevent child labor, right? Like, we had to innovate in that. And we always, I honestly believe that knowing the internal conversations and not knowing other people's internal conversation, but certainly knowing our own, that we talked about the taskers just as much as we talked about the clients and what was right for them. And, you know, that led to them setting their own rates, for example, which also happened to be help with the laws.
That's awesome.
And many other things that, you know, we believe, you know, you asked me what I'm most proud of, and it's, you know, it's the work we've provided and the lives we've changed on that side of the marketplace more than the other side. Through this whole journey, though, just getting back to your question, Corey, and as it relates to my new company, another thing that happened over the years is that we kept making things to make TaskRabbit work. And then a year later, a B2B company that made that thing and sold it would come out, and they would be worth more than TaskRabbit, which was somewhat frustrating as an entrepreneur. Yeah. So, like, we had to actively innovate in the background checking space. And then years later, various companies came out to help background check people. And we moved to using them. Nice. But they made their own B2B businesses and various things around analytics and data things and stuff like that. And so when I started thinking about the next phase for me, I started thinking a little more B2B than peer-to-peer consumer marketplaces. Specifically looked at some of the data infrastructure that I built and wish we had built, particularly around moving data around to help the marketing team do a better job. And that's what became Grouparoo.
Very cool. And so can you give us kind of, if you just did it and I missed it, my bad, but can you give us like a full overview on what Grouparoo is?
Yeah. No, I didn't do it.
Okay, cool. I was like,
worst elevator pitch ever. If you're like, did he say it? And I'm like, yeah, I did say it. No,
okay, awesome. Okay, perfect.
I cut it short. The idea around Grouparoo is specifically about these data infrastructure tools that need to exist to get information from your product or your data warehouse into the tools you're using. At the early stages, something like MailChimp or Zendesk. In the later stages, maybe Braze, then Marketo, then Salesforce, you know, all the tools that you're using. This was always a huge pain for us at TaskRabbit. As a CTO and a product leader, it was hard to prioritize this work because we had all that other stuff we were just talking about, right? We had so much to build. And eventually we had to do it, and we didn't do our best job. And then the marketing team says, hey, we need one more thing. We need one more thing. And crazy things kept happening, like prioritizing approving $1 million budget for the marketing team to move some number on a Monday. And then on a Thursday, they're like, hey, you know that thing we're doing? Can you get me this data inside of the tool we're using, SailThrough? And I'm like, no, I can't do it. You should see this infrastructure project we have. You should see this funnel test. It's going to be great. And so then they're like, oh, well, I guess we don't have to hit that number anymore because you can't help us. And I'm like, well, you still got to hit the number. So we'll talk at the end of the quarter. and they're like, well, okay, well, we really need this data. I'm like, okay, put it on the spreadsheet. We'll work on it in the end of the quarter. And we were surprised at ourselves when we didn't hit the number. And so the idea with Grouparoo is that how much easier can we make it for the engineers to give them that data infrastructure they need? We have an open source project, Node, NPM install, NPM start. Now you have the best data syncing tool from your product to these tools that that I'm aware of. And you can, if you're the engineer, you can get back to building the code. And if you're the marketer, you now have access to the data you need in the tools that you want to use to be successful.
Yeah, I think, you know, one, this is a huge problem that, you know, solving can unlock millions of dollars and just amazing opportunities to help, like, the team actually service their customers. But, you know, before we get into that, Brian, I'd love for us to kind of touch base on, you know, your passion for open source software and how, you know, a lot of the work that you've done in the past, which Brad was, you know, really excited about when he was talking with me, to now the culture that you're building at Grouperoo, because I think that's one of the most exciting parts about the company.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, I think, just think back to what I talked about earlier. And like, I would be listening to a podcast about Rails things on the train in into our two-person company, right? And I'd hear about an open source library, and then I'd use it like that day. Or I was just keeping this full list. And like, we built our whole company on high quality software in that ecosystem.
Wow.
And so it super inspired me that when we started building things, we started giving back to that community. And, you know, there's a few projects that are used by a lot of people in that community. And then we started branching out when we started doing more stuff in Node, and we, you know, got involved with that. There's no shortage of things in the Node community package-wise, but there's, if you're solving a unique tool, you're solving a problem that isn't available in open source, I always defaulted that to make that available to other people if it was a, you know, I don't know what the right word is, like applicable outside of, you know, it wasn't specifically about recommendation service for taskers, right? It was about synchronizing data between Elasticsearch to back them up or something like that. That was one of the tools that we made. And just always wanted to do that. What I found really interesting in the new thing is that engineers these days, when they have a problem show up on their Jira ticket or whatever, like their thing for the week, they Google. It's like, oh, I need to do some graphing, and you find a project called D3 or something like that to see the graphing. What you get when you Google synchronized data to MailChimp is like MailChimp's API and four different ways to meet with a sales guy that you definitely don't want to meet with. And so I saw an opportunity there to, in sort of a great history of lots of companies taking something they've built internally, even though we didn't build this internally in TaskRabbit, but just this general notion of something you know is useful and has best practices, and then building it and open sourcing it to do full functions. What that does is it maps to this life cycle of open source from operating systems to databases to infrastructure. Now you're seeing full applications being open sourced. And, you know, I think it leads to a better future.
Yeah, one of my really good buddies, Cam, he's with a company called Newcraft, and they just open sourced this really cool API that you can use to connect whatever platform that you're building to payroll systems and like compliantly like pull information and make smart decisions from that. But there's definitely a movement that's happening right now that, to people, you know, especially who are building B2B products and open sourcing it, which I think is super interesting.
Yeah, that's, I think really, it's just the next evolution of, you know, taking some of these things that used to be SaaS and now running them inside your own environment. You have more control over the data. The privacy laws are certainly headed in that direction as well. And this is all possible because 10 years ago, it wasn't easy to run that infrastructure or have a database with a billion rows in it. But now those are all, you know, Dockers or button clicks away.
Man.
And Brian, one thing I wanted to ask, so when you went to go start your new company, so How did you go about picking your co-founders? So I noticed that you had the CPO of Voom and then the head of product at Remedy. Obviously, you know, very qualified people. So in being with TaskRabbit for so long, you probably know like everyone in the industry, and especially with, you know, your experience at IBM and then Facebook and all that stuff. So, I mean, what did, at that stage in your career, because I feel like Farhaj and I, when we go to make a startup, we're like, hopefully my neighbor wants to help me out, you know, and that's kind of like the options that we have. And then for you, it's like, you're like, hopefully, you know, we'll see if Mark or Elon want to come on board. So like, what did you do when you were getting started to like really pick out your co-founders?
Well, I want a little more modesty than you're talking there, but thank you. I think it's really important. You know, it's sort of back to the reasons companies don't make it, right? And I have this strong hypothesis that it's not the product. And the other one I talked about was like channel and distribution. And then the other one is just like fights between co-founders. Like I think if you took channel and distribution and fights between co-founders, you'd find that was probably a majority of the pie.
Yeah.
And so Evan, Andy, and I actually worked together at TaskRabbit in circa 2013. That's when we made that V3 thing I was talking about. We rewrote everything. We changed the business model to basically pivot it towards more, I don't know, that early majority we were talking about, like,
yeah, just
a little easier for the average person that needs something, like a big empty text box saying, what do you need? The internet can help is not the way to reach, you know. Yeah. Is, yeah, in general not. And then bidding happens, like, what the hell is going on here? Super good for startup founders in San Francisco, not so great for the people that, you know, even now I think we forget that some people, a majority of people in fact, are still finding out about Airbnb. And so
yeah, absolutely,
if you're trying to reach that, we had to do some stuff. And so anyway, Evan, Andy, and I, Evan was head of DevOps, Andy was in charge of the product. And, you know, we forged a relationship in that, and we just know we work together. We've played, they moved on to other things. We've played video games since then. And even though I always win, just in case you guys are listening, you know,
no doubt in my mind. I knew that. Yeah.
That's how I got to be CEO, actually. I beat them in Civilization.
Nice.
And, you know, conquered their armies. And that's why I'm CEO.
That's amazing.
As we do.
And so this is the game, whoever. Anyway, and so it's super important. And so when we got to talking about, like what was next, they had both had a problem very similar to this. Andy was at Stripe and had some major work to do and did not get support from the engineering department. And he was basically very glad that he knew SQL and could help the marketing department get what they needed. Voom was a like Uber on-demand helicopter kind of thing in South America, which is a thing. And so they were in Argentina and Brazil and Mexico and the United States. And so he had all these different tools he was integrating with and no one place to put in the business rules of what it meant to be a highly engaged user, for example. They had four separate integrations and it was complicated infrastructure, and, you know, super impassioned to build something that solved that problem. And so we all just came together around our history of working together and a problem to solve, as well as this sort of open source disruption pirate mentality.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, it's what's funny is like exactly what you said is when you have like a team and a really good chemistry going on, I think it's easier to have that experimental cadence and like build towards a product that works. And instead of conflict, you guys are willing to have tough conversations where you listen. And that is a game changer.
I mean, that led to us starting Evans in Seattle, for example, starting Distributed to begin with.
Got it.
We had all kinds of very like mature second time-ish founder conversations around the kind of culture we wanted to build, like at the very beginning. You know, and certainly thankful we had those conversations now that the world is force distributed a bit more, and you know, and we're not meeting in person these days.
What are the end goal for Grouparoo? I mean, like, what is your? Yep, that was my question. Don't have any more to expand on.
That's good. Nice. I've said it.
It's already done. Yeah.
I think, you know, open source has changed lots of industries. Like, you know, nobody's going out and, you know, I talked about that spectrum, right? And like databases was a previous one. Nobody's starting with Oracle these days, right? Like they're using mm-hmm. Postgres and a variety of other database tools. And so, like, if you are an engineer or you're a, you know, company that needs to start engaging with users, the place I'd like to get to in the midterm is where some of these other projects are. Like, mm-hmm. your engineer comes to you as a tech lead and says, you know, we've got this requirement to make our homepage a little fancier. I'm gonna go make a JavaScript framework. I'll be back in a couple weeks. And the tech lead says, don't do it. Don't do that. Like, you should probably, you know, just use React or Vue or one of these things. Like TaskRabbit. One of the great open source projects we did is we invented a message bus system. At this point, I probably would use Kafka. So like, don't do it. Just use Kafka for your data infrastructure there. And so it's like, okay, we need to move this data around. Let's get to a spot where it's like, oh, you should probably try out Grouparoo. It's going to be easier to install. And then the marketers can pull their own data and not bug you after that. What we hope that leads to is like a strong data foundation that we can use the open source world to keep building on top of that and bring more and more control and power and data privacy. And, you know, some of these things that are outsourced now, we can bring them in-house to allow people to create better customer experiences.
I love that, because as a non-technical founder, there are so many times where I'm like, I want this, but over here. And so I feel like your product would do an incredible job of solving that issue. And like, I don't understand like most of this stuff. And I'm still kind of learning every single day, but it seems like a very real problem. And I'm already looking at your website, like thinking of all the different situations that I've experienced in the past where I was like, I wish we had something like this that could have solved the issues that, you know, I've seen. So what do you see this being though? Like years from now, like, do you see this being like having like some huge exit, or do you want to just keep growing it? Or like, what's your overall goal for that?
I think you can't quite make those plans. Like, if you're
good answer. Okay.
If you're focused on that, you know, like that yacht or something like that, it's too far out to have your eyes on the prize of like individual people that you can help every day and the kind of company mm-hmm. you want to be building. I think these things evolve. There's this term called like lifestyle business, which I think is like seen as derogatory, which sounds very nice to me. Keeps making money and keeps spitting off like money, and like you've created a great company with like, I don't know, 25 to 100 people that are happy working on it, and like you're all living life. like, that doesn't sound like the worst thing at all. I think if this thing fully achieves its goal, which is like really being a go-to way of not only moving data around but running how you engage with customers and the power that has, like, it'll include building that community, which might include VC funding, which then starts to trend you towards those people who are looking for an exit kind of path. Yeah. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think that's the decision you make to, you know, really try to understand the risks, the rewards, and what you're trying to build. So I don't think there's one right answer there, even for us, even now.
So how has the transition been, CTO to CEO? Are you enjoying it so far? It's been an interesting experience.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I think you have to, it helps me to remember that the hard thing isn't building the product. And that the hard thing is distribution, you know, and thank you guys. This is a piece of distribution I'm doing right now. Always be closing maybe. And so you have to keep your eyes on that, I think is super important. Especially if your comfort zone and something you take a lot of enjoyment out of is coding. An example would be, okay, let's start thinking about raising money. You know, like a CEO and like some absurd picture you have of me is like calling up people you've heard of.
Yeah.
what it actually looked for like for me was writing a LinkedIn scraper that let me know who I wanted, what connections I had to talk to the people I wanted to talk about to do that. So it's like, great. Hard CEO thing to do, first instinct, like let me node code. Like, let me program something. I got this. Everybody, step back.
Let me do a CTO thing really quick. Hold
exactly. Up. And so, like, you know, I'm working myself out of some of those habits. What I like about the early stage company is that everybody has to do everything. And so if you have the skills, even better. And so Evan is building the core platform.
Really cool.
Which does the 99% of the work of like what changed? Oh, I need to upload this person over to MailChimp because they got signed up or they changed their first name or whatever.
Yeah.
And so what we have is a million tiny connections to make with all of the tools that people use, and that's really close to the customers. This is what they're using, and so the thing I've really enjoyed is. What I enjoyed when I was CTO wasn't always just the coding. It was like using my knowledge of technology to understand what could be built and what was easy and what was hard. And so brainstorming with customers about what they need. And then even better, if I then get to make that last mile connection to the tool that we're building to solve that need. And that's what I've been enjoying. And so salesperson / sales engineer is the role that I'm talking about. And if I can't sell a completely free product, then I've probably got another thing to deal with anyway. Maybe I should go back to being a CTO.
And I think that's the worst too, though, because like we have some free parts of our product, and there's some times where like someone will offer me free advice and a free product, and I'll like turn them down. I'm like, oh god, now I feel bad because I've definitely been on that end. It's like feels miserable to not be able to do that. But I mean, one thing I've learned for sure as a CEO is that like not everyone's going to say yes. And I think that's the biggest pain in my ass is like every time I get a no, I get all butthurt. And it's like, okay, like, you know, I say no to people all the time. And so I'm going to hear no all the time too. But, but honestly, Brian, it's been awesome having you on here. I mean, you've done so many incredible things that I didn't understand technically wise, but Farhash says they were cool, so I'm like, that sounds awesome. And obviously, you guys were killing it at TaskRabbit, and then this new company looks incredible, and I'm going to talk with my dev team to kind of like have them explain what you do better to me.
So, there it is. Look at that. Always be closing.
Boom. Yeah, you got a pilot customer pretty much teed up.
Boom. There we go. You just beat me in Civ right there. Farhash, you want to give them the closing ceremonies?
Yep, Brian, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'm excited for everybody to hear about your experiences and learn from this podcast. But most importantly, this is the part of the pod where we drop your name, you drop your handles, where you want people to see your company, and how we can find you.
That's great. So I'm Brian Leonard, new founder and CEO, as we've been talking about, of Grouparoo. It's a kangaroo-themed base grouping tool for your marketing
That was my question. I was going to ask that and I forgot. Okay. Got it. Keep going. Sorry.
That's grouparoo.com on Twitter as B Leonard, and shoot me a line and we'll get your data moving, and always happy to answer any other questions that anybody has.
Boom. I love it. Do you guys, do you guys have a slogan kangaroo related or no?
No, I think you gotta pick your cutesy battles, buddy. You can't be like Grouparoo and also be like, I don't know, hop your data infrastructure where it needs to go or something like that.
Can I change the last word, all your customer data in one pouch?
Ooh, that's pretty good. I like that. I like that.
All right, that's very good.
Good.
Thank you. Well, Brian, this has been awesome. Can't wait to see that new slogan on your website ASAP. And we'll talk soon, man.
All right. Watch out for those dingoes, too, while you're at it.
Nice. There you go.
Thanks, everyone, so much for tuning in to the Building Fires podcast.
Yeah, man. We're planning on dropping episodes every Monday, talking to some amazing guests and giving you the content you deserve.
Boom. Farhaj and I are so grateful for you guys for that.
I can edit this. I know.
Farhaj and I are so grateful for all of your support. If you can, please leave 5 stars and a review on your podcast app, whichever one you use. Farhaj and I would definitely appreciate it. I'm trying to get our little podcast SEO up.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, looking forward to seeing you next week, and we're excited to make. Looking forward to seeing you next week. We got some exciting guests for you.
Boom.
Guess for ya.
Like guess pirate? For ya. You scurvy curs.
Arr.